Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you are in Santa Barbara, California, where I am, joining us on TVSB and the local television program, we welcome you. And so many of you are joining us from around the world at the podcast, which is Good Life Conversations, and the YouTube channel and all these other places you can find us. But we are thrilled to have you. We're presented by Bunn & Chevrolet, as always. And we're talking about the good stuff. We're talking to some good people. We've had great stories of all walks of life, which has been so fun. I can't wait. I was looking forward to this all weekend. We have the great Genevieve Gorder with us. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Coming to you from Manhattan. She'd open her blinds in the back and you could see the skyline, but we're worried about the lighting. So she's right there in the thick of it, Manhattan.
I'm actually designing this house that I'm standing in right now. This is not my house.
You're designing it.
Yeah, it will be amazing soon. Yes.
And that's kind of what you do. The At Home with Genevieve on Crackle, our wonderful friends at Crackle. And I've been watching Crackle. It's awesome. So we encourage you to check it out. At Home with Genevieve. And Genevieve, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your kind of young life and kind of what you were interested in and kind of what your what it was like being raised in Minnesota.
Minneapolis is a great city. It's very art forward, very progressive, inclusive. And so if you're a creative person, it's kind of a wonderland to grow up in because you're very much supported by the community and there's so many programs. Of course, I was a little baby art kid and my family is a bunch of musicians and dancers and artists. And, you know, during that time in the 80s, a lot of architecture in Midwestern cities was kind of just being left and people were moving out to the suburbs. So we stayed in the city and everything was so cheap. And my parents were very young. They were in their young 20s. We would just keep buying one beautiful Victorian after another and renovating it, taking the stank off of it, the 70s, the 80s, the bad 60s ideas, some dad's weekend project. We would take it apart and preserve the house and put it back together again. This was just my parents' side hustle. So I grew up, you know, kind of understanding architecture in a very hands-on way, which I didn't know was quietly an education I would use later. I played violin. I was a soccer player. I was like the kid who showed up for everything. I was just that extra. Like, is there a party? I'm there. Is there a class? I'll take it. My brothers, not so much, but I was that extra kid. Had great grandparents and family everywhere. And I traveled a lot with violin. I went all over the world and toured. And then I, you know, realized I was going to go into international relations in college, which I quickly figured out that was not what I was going to do. This was after I was an exchange student in high school. I was like, I'm just, you know, going to throw wild parties all over the world because that's what I thought Foreign Service did and represent the states. You know, that at 18, that's what you think it is. It's much more political than sociological. And I found graphic design and I quickly moved to New York and transferred into art school and went into interiors and graphics.
And you went to MTV.
I did. I thought MTV was pretty cool back then.
Was that the glory days of MTV?
Yeah.
I remember that.
I mean, the very beginning of MTV, I was only like 5. But, you know, by the time the early 90s rolled around, it was just throbbing. It was a magnificent force of youth. And I was working there as a designer full time and I was going to school full time. But, you know, it was, you got such a bad income. It was such a poor existence, but you had the most glamorous life. You were going to all the video award shows and all the parties, and I was designing all the little M's and all the things that would go inside the M and the astronaut floating everywhere. It was great. And after you worked there as a kid, you know, I was making like $300 a week, I think. And you could get a job just about anywhere in the world. So I did. I moved to Amsterdam for a while, worked there in design, graduated. And then I got picked up by Trading Spaces. I was working in a studio in New York, doing everything tip to tail. And Trading Spaces was looking for designers, and they flew like 5,000 of us down there to go try out. I didn't know I was going to do TV. It just, you know, there was no design TV.
Right.
So we were kind of on the first big movement of what design TV became.
My wife loved Trading Spaces.
Everyone loved that show. I mean, it was like the number one show in the country. Who knew? Who knew? Me painting your wall and moving a TV would be that entertaining.
Were you surprised by that? Were you surprised by the success? I mean, was it, what was it like in that time?
We were based off of an already very successful English version called Changing Rooms. So we knew the show was a hit, but you know, what works in England doesn't always work over here, like taxes. So we didn't know, and it just blew up. There's nothing you could do that would prepare you for that kind of public interest in something so ordinary. It was just lightning in a bottle. We were a really great chemistry of people and doing a really great formula of a show, and it worked. And Americans hadn't really, you know, felt like they deserved a pretty home. We were real behind in interiors compared to the rest of the world. So it was a fun undertaking, and the world was ripe for it.
That's so funny. I've tried to think about that over time, like, cause these shows that are just, you know, the makeover, the making something new, like from like bad to good. It's like darkness to light. It's like, there's something that's good. That's like really exciting.
Rags to riches. Americans love this story. It is like our favorite story to tell.
Yeah, seriously.
Pull you up by your bootstraps, make you pretty. Here you go. Everyone's like, yeah. So, you know, and there was a lot of crazy involved in that as well, which definitely made it more entertaining, because painting is not entertaining to watch. So we had to really be able to talk about it in a way that made people interested, because it's the most mundane stuff you can do. Putting on molding, boring. But if you make, you know, if you're with the right people, having the right conversations, anything is interesting.
That's so good. At Home with Genevieve. Tell us about At Home with Genevieve on Crackle.
Well, yeah. I mean, from Trading Spaces to now, there's probably been about 24 different lifestyle shows that I've done all over the world. And I had the opportunity to work with Crackle this year, and I was so excited because it felt a bit liberated as far as the content you can make and how you can make it. And the group of humans that are running Crackle are really fun. So yeah. I wanted to do a little bit more of a unraveling of what home is. You know, we hear about what home should look like, what it should feel like, what it should be by a very finite group of humans. And I've always been like, why am I the weird one at this table? Because it's very conservative and uptight. And, you know, I think home should be cool. Like fashion and food have had permission to become cool, whether it's just giving people access and showing you food from all over the world. Fashion obviously is just born cool, but home is the coolest thing that we have. And when it's good, your life feels good. And you bring people over because it feels good, because you're proud of this place. It's the one space we control in the world. So I wanted to get a lot of different experts and a lot of different voices on what home is, what's happening now, and how to do it differently. I'm always learning. Yes, I get hired to be an expert, but I'm also always learning. So I want to know. So we're talking to cleaning alchemists. We're talking to, you know, drag queens about matters of the heart. We're talking about, you know, dumpling masters coming in to teach me what I've been a fan of on Instagram for years. Food experts who just eat for a living, telling us where to go. And let's just get real about home. It's not always done in $100 in an hour. Like, let's talk about real costs and what we really need and don't need anymore. And post-COVID home is a completely different space. How we want to feel at home is different now, period, exclamation point, full stop.
Talk about that for a second.
Well, the psychology of how we're living, you know, we were in this incubator for years together with our family, for better or worse. And we really saw all the nuts and bolts of what home is, what's not working, what we need that we didn't know because we weren't really studying it well. And now it's like the world is an expert on their home because they've spent so much time with it. So there's a lot of new psychology in what we need for privacy. Privacy, it's like its own world now when it comes to home. We were just open layout everything for so many years. And now we cannot wait to figure out how to make that quiet personal space where you can get away from the open space. We all know this when we have to Zoom, as I'm Zooming in a room in a construction site right now. It's imperative that we have escape hatches in our house that we didn't need 3 years ago, 4 years ago, which is fun. Redefining office as we are working at home more often. What does that look like? What do we need it to be? It was often the junk drawer of your house for like decades. And now it's almost as important as your bedroom. Like the office has to work for how you sit, how you Zoom, how you virtual, how you talk on the phone, all the different ways of communication that we're working with these days. So it's kind of catching up to tech with our layout. You know, so the home got a little smarter than us with all of our tech, and we had to do a lot of catch up.
That's so good. You think about things that I don't think about, but I did put a
couple. I have to. That's my job.
That's what you do. That's why I'm talking to you. I put a cabana in my backyard, though. It's where I can work. I have a desk in a cabana, and yep. I can also smoke cigars if I want to.
You do your biz, Dean. I mean, outdoor space too has become so much more sacred than yeah. It was years ago. Like we are using it in a different way. We're using it harder, which is great, which is great. I also think, you know, how we live at home now, we may all be staying home a little bit more than we used to pre-pandemic as well, because we figured out we liked it. We don't want to be locked in it, but we really like not having to be out all the time, which is great. For us as home builders and designers. So
that's really fascinating what you said about the post-COVID. I had not thought about that at all, but everything you say makes perfect sense. And it's true. It's been true in our house. I mean, yeah, I get it. I see that.
Right. So it's the show is really tapping into that larger conversation of what we're doing now and how can we do it better. And the goal with everything I make is just how to live more beautifully. We all want to do that always. Yeah. We've never had it all figured out, you know?
No, that I love that. Okay. So you've been open about your own challenges and struggles. And I know that you've, in terms of Lyme disease and different, just your own, like your journey, which fascinates me. We talk a lot on this program with people about their actual, like, we keep it real in terms of like the actual journey.
Yeah.
So how talk about like your own challenges, the kind of how you see them, what it's been like, how you try to help other people, like just kind of talk about that for a second.
I'm assuming we're talking about health journeys, right?
Yes. That's yes.
Yeah, I mean, myself and millions of others in the country, especially where I live in New York, the Northeast is just Lyme disease central. That's where it actually started in Connecticut in a town called Lyme. So I got Lyme disease, how long ago now? It must be, maybe like 13 years ago. And I had a real hard year. I did not catch the tick. I had probably about a year of trying to figure out what was going on because it masquerades itself as many different diseases. And we finally figured it out, thank goodness. And I did a lot of work both naturally and of course with Western medicine to kind of make this guy go to sleep. So I will have Lyme for the rest of my life, like anybody who gets Lyme disease, but it can go dormant. What I've learned with Lyme that I then parlayed into Hashimoto's, which was a little later. When you have one autoimmune, another one always wants to come and party because they're like, the door's open, I'm going in. And so Hashimoto's came in, which is, as everyone knows, and if you don't, it works against your thyroid. So your thyroid is in charge of metabolism and all sorts of wonderfully important things in your body. And so when you have antibodies, it can slow stuff down. My whole journey in having these two partying autoimmune diseases is that it doesn't define who I am. It's like, I have this. Yeah, I'm a daughter. I'm a wife. I'm a designer. I'm a female. I'm an American. I'm a million things, but I don't sit in the sad sauce of like, okay, well, this is harder. This part of my life is harder. I figure out how I can build an army of people that can help me with this. And I have the luxury of doing that, but it's also just being creative. That really helps me build these teams to get me through whatever feels hard. And that's having a naturopath, and that's making sure that my supplements are right. It's making sure that I get checked every 6 months. And I'm fortunate, I'm not on any kind of medication for it. I've got everything in check right now, because you never know what's going to change. But it's just part of who I am now. But it isn't what I lead with. You know, a lot of people get sick, and I saw this once you go online and you have a thing, you have psoriasis or you have Hashimoto's, and that becomes their entire life.
Right.
And I get how it feels like that in the beginning, but you can't live like that. And these are not life-threatening diseases. We can move through this. So yes, I have this thing. I also have a lot of hair, but I don't lead with that either. So that's how I deal with it. I like information. I love research, Dean. I'm a real nerd for information. I will wormhole and read until I'm blue in the face, just so I feel like I can be my best advocate. I'm my best detective. And you have to be that when it comes to medical stuff.
That's a great perspective. Do you wake up this perky?
Yeah. My whole life. And aunts and uncles are like, where did you come from? Because he's not my parents. I don't know what wiring I got. I'm just Leo. So I'm just happy. I'm optimist. And I don't get stuck in the bad stuff. Yes, I feel grief and pain and all of those things, but I also know I'm moving through that and I'm human. But no, I tend to look at everything beautifully first.
You have a teenage daughter.
You.
I have a couple of those. We talk about
a couple of those. Yeah.
Well, right now I have three, but I used to have four.
Teenagers,
two sons, two daughters. We have five total, but teenagers are something, aren't they?
I mean, yes, I love so much of it. I also am like over half of it, where you know, attitude and like, you know, nothing,
right?
You know, that gets hard after a while. I'm like, why are you so mean all the time?
Right.
Right. But I have to remember, like, her hormones are going buck wild, and I just have to ride with her. I try and always ask if she wants to do everything. She'll probably want to do 1% of what I offer. And I just need to be grateful for that. But does it piss me off? Yeah.
Yeah.
She pisses me off all the time, but I love her more than anything.
Yeah. It's something. It's really something. I wasn't expecting that. I thought the hard part was going to be key when they were little.
And no, I love you so much then.
No, I know. That's like, we used to be smart and lovable.
Yes. And like, we hung the moon. And
yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I mean, they think they've invented everything.
Right.
We know nothing. We suck. And I'm just like, one day you're going to wake up and you're going to realize how good you have it, because I'm a cool mom.
Yeah. No, we're very cool, but they just are not acknowledging it.
See it later. They have to find their own cool.
Have you used the term drip?
Oh yeah. Drip, sus, bus, what else? Slay, queen, all of it. Yes. But when I say it, there's a couple words she'll let me say, but not all of them, because she doesn't think I have the right, you know, don't say that, mom. Oh my God. Devastating.
I said it in the car the other day. I said, boys, do you think I'm dripping? I pronounced the G. I went all the way dripping.
Were they like, Dad, stop?
Because I'll threaten. I mean, I'll do it in front of their friends. If you don't want to play ball the way I want it, I'll use the word in front of your friends.
I have threatened to do the same. I love those things though. Like my goal was to be like the hangout house, just because my house was not growing up the hangout house. It was always very managed and like no friends after five, that kind of stuff. And it was like, it sucked. And so I made it my mission to be the hangout house, and it's worked. So I really know her friends and love her friends. I think that's
good.
It's important. You want to know the people they're hanging out with, because that's 90% of what they're doing is coming from those outlets. And I want to understand the outlets, if you know what I mean.
Yes. No, I agree. Having them in the house is a really good thing, I think.
Yeah. And that's my job. I'm building homes for the world. So I want her to feel the most at home, and that everyone's welcome. So that's been really fun. I like that. Teenagers are really funny. If they're not being mean to you, I think they're full-time comedy.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I mean, it goes in waves kind of.
Yeah.
So I think hospitality in general is such a gift. Like letting somebody into your space and hosting them with love and including them and caring for them is like a powerful gift. I feel like that's something that you're like onto.
Obviously you are too. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's probably my happiest times in life when a lot of people are over in my home and I've made this moment happen and there's a hum. You know, everyone's just happy. And it makes so many people happy at once, just with food and home. It's not about going out. It's not about buying expensive things. It's doing thoughtful things that make people feel special and comfortable. Like they just don't want to go.
Yeah.
And that could be bad if it's a guest room after many weeks, but for parties and get togethers, like that is my truest joy. Cooking all day and having people come over and eat all night, and just great music, the lighting. Those are the best.
The candles, I love all the little touches. This kind of sounds a little weird, but it's really great. Like, and what is it, Maya Angelou? Yeah. Okay, thank
you. Appreciate the good
thing. Yeah. Well, they say, Maya Angelou, the people forget what you say, forget what you did, but they never forget how you make them feel. Yes. I totally believe that. And I totally believe hosting and hospitality in terms of what you're saying to somebody. You're not just sharing a meal, you're actually sharing your life, when you come to the table.
It's one of the most open things you can do. And I feel often in countries that where I'm a guest and I don't know anybody, I've been invited into people's homes all over the world. And I think how beautiful that is. That isn't like an American first thing where we meet someone like, come on over, we gotta suss this out. So I'm always so impressed and delighted to be brought into someone's home. You remember that trip more than any other trip where you got to go to somebody's house, right? Otherwise you're just on the outside of life. Home is the end.
That's so important that we don't lose that, in this day and age we communicate a lot with these, and that's fine. And I tell my kids, these are neutral. It's all about, just like money. It's all about the hand, the beholder, the hand of the person it's in. It could be a really terrible thing because there's lots of terrible stuff out there, or it can be a really useful tool to love people, but we can't lose the sitting across the table from somebody and sharing a meal.
It's funny. I was just walking by this billboard that's in my neighborhood, and it's for this AI dating service. And I'm like, how would an AI dating service work? And, just big, huge, wheat-pasted posters everywhere. I think it's called like Blush or something. I was so curious. I'm like, what is this? And it was basically artificial intelligence, made images and people that you can practice dating on. And I'm like, why don't you just go sit across the table from someone and practice talking instead?
Right.
Why are you getting further away from what you want? Don't do that.
Right. Yeah. But, no, I'm with you on that. Yeah. It's the world's it's kind of funny out there. It's a little interesting. But you know, but what I love about people like you that is you're a builder and a creator, and you're after it and you're joyful. And I love that. And I admire that. And I appreciate it. And when my wife, your bio was on our printer over the weekend, and she's like, you're interviewing Genevieve Gorder. I love Trace. So she was all excited. So I got to admit, that's not really my sweet spot, but I admire people who are builders, creators, lovers, dreamers, doers, like, and you're clearly like all of that. So
I think we would be friends, Dean, if I lived in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'd come over and hang out because you seem like a lovely person too.
Well, thank you. Well, we should break bread. Come to Santa Barbara. We'll have you over.
Twist my arm. I'll be there tomorrow. I love that place.
We'll light some candles and break bread together.
Thank you, Dean. Please say hello.
Genevieve Gorder, everybody. What a wonderful person, Manhattan. And make sure you check it out. At Home with Genevieve on Crackle. We love our friends at Crackle. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.